CT Pittsburgh, meaty and full of flavor since 1940.
Before we get started, I'd like to remind you that the views, thoughts, and opinions expressed in this show are solely those of individuals involved and do not necessarily represent those of WRCT Pittsburgh and its members.
As I'm sure most of you would guess, I don't typically wait around for the next episode of Tucker Carlson's Fox News propaganda program, but I actually was curious as to what the program would look like last night. Over the weekend, as we covered yesterday, there was a horrifying terrorist mass shooting targeting Black people in Buffalo, New York, in which in total, 10 people were killed and 13 injured. The 18-year-old white domestic-born shooter, inspired by the ideas of the Great Replacement and white birth rates that have been just everywhere on right-wing media over the last few years, the shooter went to Buffalo looking to kill Black people, and indeed he killed many Black people. And I was waiting to see, how is Tucker Carlson going to spin it? How is Ben Shapiro going to spin it? How is Fox News going to spin it? Well, we immediately saw, as we looked at yesterday, Fox News talking about video game violence and continuing to fearmonger about terrorist immigrants coming over the U.S.-Mexico border. So we saw the general Fox News approach. But the Shooter's Manifesto had almost verbatim language that we saw on the Tucker Carlson program. So the question was, what's Tucker going to say? And we're going to look at clips. And it was truly a surreal episode in absolutely every way. How was Tucker going to do it? How was Tucker going to separate himself? How was he going to minimize? Well, part of it, bizarrely, included talking about Rwanda, if you can believe it. I'm talking about the African country of Rwanda. A completely, I can't think of a better term for it, Kafkaesque episode of the Tucker Carlson program. So let's start with the first clip in which Tucker tries to distance himself, as well as Fox News, from the Buffalo shooter, who was, of course, inspired by the conspiracy theories that Tucker and others have been pushing. Take a look at this.
But what he wrote does not add up to a manifesto.
Oh.
It is not a blueprint for a new extremist political movement, much less the potential inspiration for a racist revolution. Anyone who claims that it is lying. Or
Well, if you read it, you realize that that's exactly what it is. It's taking the conspiracy theories that Tucker and others have been repeating on their programs and saying, well, the solution is we've got to go and kill people who aren't white. And that's what he did.
Hasn't read it. Instead, Gendron's letter is a rambling pastiche of slogans and internet memes, some of which flatly contradict one another. The document is not recognizably left-wing or right-wing. It's not really political at all.
That's obviously completely untrue because it aligns with the exact political ideology espoused by those surrounding Donald Trump and on this so-called populist right, where they sound all about the middle class, but then the solutions are, well, we've got to do something about these non-white immigrants coming into the country.
The document is crazy. It's the product of a diseased and organized mind.
And remember, to some degree, we can say there's something mentally not working with these folks. But as I mentioned before yesterday, the manifesto is quite cogent and coherent as far as these manifestos go. And writing this off as simply mental illness doesn't make any sense. And remember, most mentally ill people never commit any violence.
At one point, Gendron suggests that Fox News is part of some global conspiracy against him. He writes like the mental patient he is, disjointed, irrational, paranoid. Now, that's true, not that it makes the atrocities he committed easier to bear. If your daughter was murdered on Saturday in Buffalo, you wouldn't care why the killer did it or who he voted for. But the truth about Peyton Gendron does tell you a lot about the ruthlessness and dishonesty of our political leadership. Within minutes of Saturday's shooting, before all of the bodies of those 10 murdered Americans had even been identified by their loved ones, professional Democrats had begun a coordinated campaign to blame those murders on their political opponents. They did it, they said immediately. Patron Gendron was the heir to Donald Trump.
Okay, so listen, I am sympathetic to the fraught nature of immediately making political declarations. That's why often with these cases, I won't cover it the next day. In this case, it happened on a weekend, so we had time. To the extent that anybody before we had information made any claims that weren't yet based in fact, that's wrong. And I would denounce that. I didn't actually see that, but I also didn't pay attention to the news on the day of. I read about everything after the fact. But the manifesto can be seen only as an almost verbatim reproduction of the things we've heard from Tucker and from other right wing media. Now, as I mentioned earlier, at one point, Tucker talked about Rwanda. He put up a quote from 2004 New York Times about Rwanda and the Rwandan genocide. Just, I mean, completely bizarre, bizarre stuff. And then at another moment, Tucker again focused on the, this was just a lone mentally ill guy. That's it.
Because a mentally ill teenager murdered strangers, you cannot be allowed to express your political views out loud. That's what they're telling you. That's what they've wanted to tell you for a long time. But Saturday's massacre gives them a pretext, a justification.
So playing on the idea that all of a sudden now, because of one mentally ill guy, completely disconnected from any political rhetoric, I mean, other than the fact that the manifesto contains verbatim rhetoric from my show, me being speaking as Tucker here, What really this is about silencing your political views. Imagine being so depraved or dishonest or ignorant. I don't know which it is with Tucker. To pretend that what this is really about is simply silencing the political speech of people like Tucker who just want to give their opinions. Now, again, this thing of mentally ill, when you look at the manifesto, it's articulate, fascist, racist, anti-Semitic hate linked to ideas that we've seen propagated by Tucker and others, which we will look at again later in the show. Something is obviously wrong with people who commit these acts of violence. But the mental illness, the merely mental illness line used to excuse the political reality of these people's motivations is immoral and or dishonest and maybe just ignorant. But I have a hard time believing that with Tucker, it's ignorant. So a bizarre Tucker Carlson show, almost as bizarre as what Ben Shapiro had to say, which we're going to go to next. I am going to show you now the epitome of what was it in Orwell's 84? It's like newspeak or doublethink or everything is reversed. Everything is opposite. Night is day, up is down, etc. It is undeniable that the alleged shooter's alleged manifesto from Buffalo supports these ideas perpetuated almost exclusively. I mean, just to be conservative, 99.8%. By right wingers. There's no denying that that's the rhetoric that was in the manifesto. So Ben Shapiro's approach, because listen, everything's coming off the walls for these people. Tucker was saying that there was nothing political about the manifesto at all. Ben Shapiro's approach is, okay, just claim that it's left wing stuff. Claim that the great replacement theory, that we have to worry about non-whites changing the makeup of the country and changing who we are and destroying. Ben Shapiro just goes, this is a left-wing ideology. He says that great replacement theory contains an essentialism about race that to him looks like left-wing wokeism. It's the Trump thing of don't believe what you're seeing, don't believe what you're reading. Just listen to me instead. Check this out.
Now, what the left is trying to do is broaden out the term great replacement theory to include any sort of normal concerns about illegal immigration, any suggestions that demographic voting patterns make a difference, which, of course, everybody both left and right knows that they do. I mean, the left has been claiming for literally as long as I've been alive, changing demographic patterns in the United States were going to shift the politics of the country in a progressive direction. This is the base of Roy Teixeira's The Emerging Democratic Majority in 2003. So
now what he's doing there is kind of slick. We've talked about for a really long time that over a period of decades, demographics shift in a natural way. One of the things that we've observed in that shift is that certain states, in particular southern states, are becoming slightly more what we sometimes call Latino or Hispanic and slightly less white. And we've all said that will have an effect on elections. That is not even remotely equivalent to what the right does, which is say we have brown people hyperbreeding. They're just pumping out children. And it's a democratic strategy to bring illegal aliens to the country so that then eventually they will be naturalized. And as this conspiracy, that's what the right has been saying. That's the right idea. On the left, and really it's not the left, it's just in reality, we go, oh, yeah, demographics shift over time. And here's how they're shifting. There's no conspiracy to start, you know, breeding Hispanic women. I mean, it's dystopian what they talk about. And Ben Shapiro wants you to believe that it's kind of the same thing. Like, you know, great replacement theory. Liberals recognize demographic changes. It's all the same. No, it's not.
If you want to talk about the great replacement theory and what this person actually thought, you have to actually read the manifesto.
Right.
You actually have to know what the great replacement theory is.
Yes.
The great replacement theory is the theory that essentially there are a bunch of Jewish elites, and this coterie of Jewish elites wishes to pervert the racial stock of a country like the United States, a predominantly white country, in order to weaken the country from within. That is the great replacement theory. It is not concerns about illegal immigration. It is not concerns about cultural assimilation. The great replacement.
And of course, that's very dishonest because the mechanism that those who are purveyors of the great replacement theory say Democrats are using is the bringing in of legal and illegal immigrants. I mean, it's he wants to separate the two things. Crazy anti-Semitic idea about Jews trying to change the demographics has nothing to do with the immigration piece. Actually, no, the immigration piece is the tool they claim is being used to affect the change. It, you can't disaggregate the two.
In theory is the idea there can never be cultural assimilation. The great replacement theory is the idea that racism, that race is destiny. In fact, the racial essentialism of great replacement theory looks a lot more like wokeism than it does like mainstream conservatism or mainstream liberalism.
There it is, guys. The great replacement theory, despite everybody espousing it being a right winger, is actually left wing. It's now some people fall for this. Now, just as a reminder, it's all right wingers promoting this stuff. Here's Tucker Carlson saying that immigration makes the country dirtier and poorer. These are right wingers, okay?
Good evening and welcome to Tucker Carlson Tonight. Here's a funny thing that we noticed the other day. People debate all the time about mass immigration. What you never hear anybody do is make the economic case for mass immigration. But as an economic matter, this is insane. It's indefensible, so nobody even tries to defend it. Instead, our leaders demand that you shut up and accept this. We have a moral obligation to admit the world's poor, they tell us, even if it makes our own country poorer and dirtier and more divided.
Poorer and more divided. And then more Tucker. I mean, the stuff is straight from right-wing media.
I'm laughing because this is one of about 10 stories that I know you've covered. Where the government shows preference to people who have shown absolute contempt for our customs, our laws, our system itself, and they're being treated better than American citizens. Now, I know that the left and all the little gatekeepers on Twitter become literally hysterical if you use the term replacement, if you suggest that the Democratic Party is trying to replace the current electorate, the voters now casting ballots, with new people, more obedient voters from the third world.
Now, as you can see, it's not just some vague thing. It's this is the strategy of the Democrats. That's the claim that's being made. Just a couple more. I know I played these yesterday, but they really should be attached here so you can see how absurd what Ben Shapiro is saying is. Here's Charlie Kirk, another right winger.
President Joe Biden's Department of Defense will accept 30,000 Afghan refugees into military installations following the collapse of Kabul. Boom. Political transformation. Let the country crumble. Do you know there's 5 million displaced people in Afghanistan now? This was all intentional. Joe Biden let it fall apart to now say, oh, I'm so sorry. I guarantee you Joe Biden's speech this afternoon will talk about refugee assistance and relocation support.
So there it is. This is something the right says Democrats are doing. It is not wokeism. And lastly, Lauren Boebert, same thing.
Yes, there is definitely a replacement theory that's going on right now. We are killing American jobs and bringing in illegal aliens from all over the world to replace them if Americans will not comply with the tyrannical orders that are coming down from the White House.
So the ideal thing would be to say that there's nothing in the manifesto that is about great replacement theory. Obviously, they can't do that here. So the new move is, oh, that's all left wing. Great replacement theory is actually a form of wokeism. They are just lying to you, and many of their followers are falling for it. Make sure you're on my mailing list. You can sign up at davidpakman.com. That will notify you on Monday, Memorial Day, about our one-day membership special. I would love for you to join on that day. Just get on my mailing list at davidpakman.com. We'll take a quick break and be right back. Republican Congresswoman Liz Cheney has sort of had enough with some of her Republican colleagues. She's saying to them, hey, we've just got to denounce this white supremacy. We've got to denounce this great replacement theory stuff. We need to actually forcefully, not in a mealy-mouthed and equivocating way. We just need to denounce the stuff that has been coming from our side that is in the Buffalo Shooters Manifesto. And this makes her slightly less crazy than other Republicans, but it doesn't make her a political ally. That's an important thing to remember. So let's talk this through. Liz Cheney has reportedly said now that Republican House leaders need to renounce the insanity that is sort of tied up with what the Buffalo shooter said. Liz Cheney echoed a growing chorus that Saturday's race-targeted massacre in Buffalo, New York, was a product of rhetoric pushed by Republican leaders. Let's look at the tweet that she sent, where she said the House Republican leadership has enabled white nationalism, white supremacy, and anti-Semitism. That's correct. Liz Cheney is right. She went on to say, history has taught us that what begins with words ends in far worse. And of course, that's what we saw in Buffalo over the weekend. Going on to say, Republican leaders must renounce and reject these views and those who hold them. It's not enough just to say that you're against violence and that you're against what the shooter did and that you're against targeting of black people the way the shooter did. You can't just kind of pick around the edges at the issue. Liz Cheney is accurately saying we have to forcefully say there is simply no place for white nationalism, white supremacy, and anti-Semitism in the Republican Party. That's what undergirds the manifesto and the shooting that took place in Buffalo over the weekend. And Republican leaders, at least so far, have not been willing to say that. Now, I think it's important when we talk about Liz Cheney in these terms to remind you how low the bar is. Liz Cheney is a complete and total Trumpist by policy. Well, hold on. What do you mean, David? Well, if you look at 538's tracking of Liz Cheney, they found that in her career, Liz Cheney voted 93% with Donald Trump's position. OK, 93% with Donald Trump's position. During the 115th Congress, it was 96%. During the 116th Congress, it was, you know, 92.8%. She almost always is aligned with Trump, or was when Donald Trump was president. So this is not a political ally. Sometimes I say these are not our friends, and some people get mad and they write in and say, David, that's divisive language. We can all be friends. Maybe. OK, maybe we can be friends. Maybe not. Let's just forget about that. These are not political allies. Yes, Liz Cheney said Trump was responsible for inciting the insurrection. OK, that doesn't make her a political ally. That just means she's marginally willing to tell the truth about obvious things. Liz Cheney has said Donald Trump really lost the election. It wasn't stolen by Joe Biden. Trump just lost. That's it. It doesn't make her a political ally. 93% of the time, she still voted with Donald Trump during her career. And at the end of the day, that's really how we evaluate someone's political perspective. So she's absolutely right. She's correctly pointing out that the Republican leadership has been mealy-mouthed and unwilling to sort of in a full-throated way just denounce the way that this radical ideology has pervaded the Republican Party and right-wing media. She's completely correct. But she still voted the way Trump did, in line with Trump's positions, 93% of the time. So it's just a reminder. What do we do with that information? Okay, it's a reminder that as we think about who do we need in power to achieve change? It's not going to be slightly less wacky Republicans like Liz Cheney. That's not where the future of the left in the United States is. It's not going to be. We can't count on her. It's also not going to be center right Democrats like Joe Manchin. We just have to be realistic about that. That's the point I'm trying to make here. And Liz Cheney, good for her. Let's see if the Republican Party listens to her. They don't seem to care about what she has to say. And let's see if they actually come out in a full-throated way, denounce this ideology that is all over the Buffalo shooting. This is kind of interesting. We have a bunch of primaries today. There's primaries today in Pennsylvania. There's also primaries today in North Carolina. In North Carolina, one of the people that is up for election, for re-election, is radical Trumpist Republican Congressman Madison Cawthorn. Now, because of Madison Cawthorn's habitual law breaking and also, I guess we would call them off color comments about Washington, D.C., about orgies and cocaine. As you might remember, he's now been caught two or three times trying to bring guns through TSA security. He's had a bunch of police interactions involving speeding. And I don't remember if it went over to reckless driving or not. The Republican Party leadership seems to not be thrilled with Madison Cawthorn. And it's believed, although it has not been proven, that it is the Republican Party that is behind some of these distasteful, I guess we would call them, or videos, or compromising videos. I don't even know what term to use. Racy videos of Madison Cawthorn that have been released. The idea being that the Republican Party establishment is kind of sick of Cawthorn and they want him out. Well, he's in his primary fight, and that primary is today. And even though he is still winning, Donald Trump now seems to have come out of the woodwork posting on Truth Social.
Truth Central.
Yeah, he calls it Truth Central. I call it Truth Social. Donald Trump sort of trying to help Madison Cawthorn and defending him, posting, quote, "At 18 years of age, Madison Cawthorn, the now 26-year-old congressman from the great state of North Carolina, went through a life-changing event, the likes of which fortunately few people will ever have to endure. In just seconds, he lost the use of the lower half of his body, a traumatic experience to say the least." That's true. He was in a car accident. Terrible. "When Madison was first elected to Congress, he did a great job. Recently, he made some foolish mistakes, which I don't believe he'll make again. Let's give Madison a second chance." So there's a bunch of funny things about this. The first layer of this is that look at how long Donald Trump waited to make this endorsement of Madison Cawthorn. Why did Trump wait so long? He wanted to make sure he wasn't endorsing a loser. Even though Madison Cawthorn has lost significant support for the from the Republican Party and within his primary, it is now pretty clear that he's going to win the primary. I would be shocked if the polling is wrong. He's ahead by less, but he's still ahead. I would be shocked if he lost. Trump is coming out with this the day before the primary because Trump is very concerned with his record. And we are now going to see what the ultimate results are. But Trump doesn't particularly care about Cawthorn, other than, sure, Cawthorn is a supporter of Trump. Trump just wants to tack on wins onto his supposedly great endorsement record, which is actually sort of mediocre. That's number one. Number two, this is another reminder that the norms of the Republican Party, Trump genuinely doesn't care about them. And we sort of knew that. Madison Cawthorn talking about orgies and cocaine and all these different things. Trump genuinely doesn't care about that. And it reminds us of what early on in the 2016 primary with the Republican Party created a rift between Trump and other Republicans. Turns out that Trump will just support anybody that supports him, assuming it won't be hurtful to Trump or damaging to Trump in some way. And that's exactly what we are seeing here. So we're going to follow all of these results tonight in Pennsylvania. We'll be streaming results live. North Carolina will be streaming results live. I hope you'll join me. We'll be live on YouTube, Twitch, and Facebook. And we will also have more on these stories on all of our platforms, including Instagram, where you can find us at David Pakman Show. Today, I'm going to be speaking with Greg Barrick, who's the author of Criminology on Trump and also Emeritus Professor of Criminology and Criminal Justice at Eastern Michigan University. It's really great having you on. I appreciate your time today.
Thank you.
So in the book, you really do an analysis of Trump and the Trump family and the presidency and the business enterprise Trump through sort of a criminology lens, the idea of Trump operating as a sort of pseudo mob boss, in a sense. Can you first lay out the kind of general approach and perspective that you used here and why you did it in this way?
Okay, well, I'm a criminologist and I study crime and I study the administration of justice, and I do so in a very broad based manner, in the sense that I examine all laws, whether they be civil or criminal, constitutional, international. So he was a perfect subject, a perfect object. And what I think makes my analysis unique or different from literally the thousands of other books on Trump is that it is really the first and only criminal biography of Donald Trump. And it tries to give the 45th president his rightful place in the history of U.S. crime. What it attempts to explain systemically or systematically throughout his entire life is his uncanny ability to get over, regardless of whether we're talking business, economics, whether we're talking politics, whether we're talking interpersonal relationships. He has the ability to harm and abuse and to always escape the consequences, or almost always escape. At least criminally, he's fully escaped. Civilly, he's been held accountable more than once.
So let's talk about a few examples. Before he was president, Trump would notoriously sue lots of people, and the outcomes of those lawsuits varied pretty dramatically. And in some cases, it seemed as though the lawsuit may have been a tool to maybe cover up his own pre-existing wrongdoing. Can you talk a little bit about the use of lawsuits?
Right. Well, as many of your readers may know, or many of your listeners may know, Trump's mentor and surrogate father was, how am I having a blank here? All time, the McCarthy hearings prosecutor. Okay.
Whose name I also don't remember.
Right. How is this crazy of me? You know, where's my Roy Cohn?
Roy Marcus Cohn. Yeah.
Right. Okay. So Cohn is his first mentor and surrogate father, and really teaches him the art of weaponizing the law. And the two of them, over a case involving housing discrimination in projects owned by his father throughout New York, Donald retained Cohn to represent them. And this is where it all began, for Donald to use the law against the law and to always countersue, to never acknowledge defeat. So that's where it first began. And whether he wins or loses the case, it almost is immaterial to Donald. Because at the end of the day, he will always claim victory, that he won, just as he won the election. He knows he didn't win the election. He knows he didn't win the cases that he claims to, but that's his narrative.
Can you talk about other, sometimes the term is used that he had a way to skirt the law in his business career, which is skirting the law different than breaking the law?
I can't tell you, that there's any legal meaning to the notion of skirting the law. It's
right.
Like evading the law. It's like not getting caught.
Mm.
It's not really not breaking the law. He's engaged in lawlessness pretty much day in and day out through various types of business arrangements that he's put together.
What are some examples of that?
Well, the best example is the way in which, beginning with Fred Sr., Donald's father, that he began to transfer his enormous wealth to his children, some of which you could legitimately pass on, and some of which he created shell companies that were companies in name only. He created arrangements where Donald and his siblings became owners of certain companies within the Trump organization. And so he was billing them for work that he wasn't doing. That's an example. Donald has continued with that into at least three of his children that we're aware of, Eric and Junior and Ivanka.
When we think about the Trump presidency, he's really gotten away with the most kind of basic pedestrian, just kind of shrugging off the things that are thrown at him. I mean, he recently had four cell phones subpoenaed and he wrote, "I lost the phones. I don't know where the phones are. What's going to come of that? We don't know. Probably nothing." Endless requests for documents that seem to be legitimate requests, subpoenas, etc. No, here it's executive privilege and there it's a political witch hunt. And it seems as though he just gets away with it. Is that in fact the way that it has gone?
Criminally, that is in fact the way it has gone.
Okay.
I mean, he's yet to be prosecuted for a single criminal offense
yes.
in his life. So it's certainly gone that way there. In terms of his civil litigation, he has an impressive record. Maybe he's lost 40, 50 cases, won 300. The rest have been draws.
Mm. And when you say a draw, is that good for Trump or good for someone else?
It's usually good for Trump.
Okay.
Because, you know, Trump has an interesting habit. When he wins a case, you and I, the taxpayers, pay his attorneys.
Mm.
And when he loses a case, he stiffs his attorneys.
Right, right. When it comes to the current investigations, you know, I have people in my audience who are convinced, I mean convinced, that at some point Trump's going to face criminal prosecution. I just don't think so. And when we go through what's being looked at right now, there's the January 6th committee who could make referrals, depending on what they find, to the justice system. They could, although it's not their main charge, as described. There's the New York investigation, where we actually saw some investigators resign because they got the impression that there's not really any interest in actually prosecuting Donald Trump. You've got the Georgia investigation for possible election fraud. I mean, is there any shot any of this stuff goes anywhere?
Yeah, there's always a shot that it goes somewhere. I think that what people want to know is whether Attorney General Merrick Garland, whether or not he's going to come forward. And, you know, people have been very wishy-washy and, you know, wanting this to have occurred already. What I think is significant, a couple of things I think are significant as to why I think he ultimately will prosecute. I mean,
okay.
I've been very... You know, I've been mixed as to whether he will or he won't. In part, one sign was Eric, former Attorney General Eric
Holder.
Holder, thank you. Eric Holder, who is an institutionalist, who, for example, didn't prosecute the 10,000 security fraudsters on Wall Street, gave them all a pass. He thought that in all likelihood, because presidents in the past have been given passes by the next attorney general, that this would be the same situation with Trump. He's come around and thinks differently. Now that we understand that this was involving significant number of elected and appointed officials and how big the conspiracy was, he now thinks that, you know, there should be a prosecution. His change in position is significant. But I think last but not least, because of the historical situation that we find ourselves in terms of autocrats and Democrats and struggles with Ukraine and Russia and elsewhere, that it becomes rather embarrassing. And it becomes a slap in the face of so-called American democracy when we prove that somebody and somebodies who have power are above the law. It's not a very good marketing tool for the United States. And I think that political pressure, because it's on the world stage, is also adding substance to the fact that I think Garland is going to go after him.
How long could it take?
Before he prosecutes?
Yeah.
In my mind, it could go as long as before the primary of 2024.
Okay.
I mean, the problem is if they go after him and if he can keep the delays from the actual trial occurring before the primary begins, then he'll be able to probably sidestep whether he wins or loses 2024, because I'm convinced that whether he loses or not, they will the Republicans and company will actually steal the election. So therefore, he can keep the Attorney General and the Justice Department away from him to 2029.
Wait, so I don't want to go. I don't want to miss something you just said. That's a big deal. You believe that in 24, the sort of trial run that was 2020, some of those different ideas that were floated for how to take an election they didn't win, you think they might successfully use those tools in 24?
I think they're well on their way. They have control of 26 out of the 50 state legislative bodies who could and are in fact preparing themselves to overturn the election.
Wow. Okay, let's come back to that. Many armchair mental health professionals during the Trump era would maybe not diagnose, but suggest that Donald Trump could be narcissistic, that he might be delusional, that he's self-deluded, that he's mentally ill in different ways, that he lies uncontrollably, pathological lies, etc. One of the things that you write, if I understand it correctly, is that while all of those things may be true, you don't believe that any of it is the sort of explanation or ultimate cause of the criminality and the lying and the deception, that in that sense, he knows what he's doing. Am I accurately summarizing your position?
You are spot on. That's exactly what we're arguing. He is a rational player. He may be, you know, suffering from a variety of mental illnesses, but when it comes to his day-to-day affairs, he is a rational player. He clearly knows that he did not win the election. Mm. He is not self-deluded for a moment. He's a con, a performance artist, and he's just doing the script.
So how do you know that? And I guess with the election thing as an example, I've gone back and forth over time. Does Trump think he won the election, or does he know that that he didn't really win? And I was kind of on the side of he's lying. It's a con. But more recently, we've had reports from behind the scenes that he was privately talking to people and saying that he won, which doesn't sound like something he would do if he knew he didn't really win.
It depends on who he's privately talking to.
Okay.
He wouldn't say that to Jared. He wouldn't say it to Ivanka, but he would say it to the people who have all been subpoenaed, for example.
Like Mark Meadows, for example. He
right,
would keep
exactly.
up the lie with Mark Meadows.
He would keep up the lie with those people. I mean, Jared knows better. He knows the it wasn't stolen, just like Bannon knows it wasn't stolen.
So then your assertion is when it comes to the audience that needs to hear the lies, Trump knows he's not telling the truth.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. That's why he's such a great performer.
Mm. When it comes to zooming out a little bit now.
Sure.
One of the conversations that took place a bunch of times while Trump was president was, are our checks and balances sort of like robust enough? And one of the kind of answers that was zeroed in on was, generally speaking, they are, but the founding fathers never imagined someone like Trump would be elected. And that's why there aren't more checks and balances that would have prevented some of the things that Donald Trump did. What's your sense of that? Did the checks and balances fail?
I'm not sure the checks and balances were tested until now.
Right.
And they clearly, it remains to be seen whether or not they work or they don't work from my perspective. With respect to the popular story or explanation that the founding fathers never thought that an oligarch or that some, you know, very wealthy person could be doing similar things to Donald. They knew about kings. Mm. I mean, they knew about the danger of the parties reverting back. You know, they didn't care for parties, but yeah. So I don't buy that, but you know, I'm not that much of an expert to know.
Fair, Fair. The book is Criminology on Trump. We've been speaking with the book's author, Greg Barrick, who's also emeritus professor of criminology and criminal justice at Eastern Michigan University. So appreciate your time today. Thank you so much.
Thank you, David.
I'm going to play a video for you today that I know many of you will think has to be fake. It has to be a comedy skit. It has to be satire. It must be from Saturday Night Live, and it's not. I'm going to play a clip for you today of a mom interviewed on Fox News who is suing her son's school because her son will no longer do chores at home because he's been taught critical race theory. Apparently, her son is half black. She says in a New York Post article that her son looks Hawaiian. And she says all of a sudden, because of critical stuff that her son has been taught, he won't do chores around the house anymore. It is unbelievable. Look at this.
All right. So, Melissa, your son is the father's black, you're white, and he'd never mentioned issues with race before, you're saying. What exactly changed?
Right. We didn't have issues before. He's in eighth grade. They introduced this critical program, and
they introduced the critical program, and all of a sudden, what happened? Listen to this.
And now he's having racial issues that was not there before.
What kind of racial issues is he having?
Well, he's seen himself just as a black man. He's seen things that don't go his way as racism, and he's finding safety in numbers now.
He's finding safety in numbers. I would love to explore that more.
You're saying he gets a bad grade at school, he blames racism, or a girl rejects him on a date, racism. Are those the kind of things you're seeing?
Yes. I ask him to clean the house, racism. Yes.
You're kidding, right? Are you serious?
No, I'm serious. They have totally changed his perspective. They have.
Can you imagine? Hey, you're supposed to vacuum. That's racist, Mom. Hey, I'm your mom. It's time to vacuum. I mean, it's you're suing the school because I can't get. How is this a real segment? It's very difficult to believe that this isn't a plant. I actually thought this is going to be another one. You know, when these people prank Fox News and it turns out that it's actually a complete and total joke. Like there was this famous one. We interviewed the guy, Max Rice, who went on Fox and he pretended that he was a former Obama voter. Who wanted to vote for Romney instead because of some, he lost a bet. It was like this whole fake thing. And later it came out, it was all a joke. I wrongly assumed this was going to be a joke. And there's one other one possibility is the mom has completely lost control of just parenting. Like she just doesn't know how to parent. That's one possibility. The other possibility is that this is sort of like made up or exaggerated. And she's using her kid as a political pawn. Like at some point, don't you say, listen, You've just got to do your homework. You've just got to do your chores. I'm the parent. I'm in charge here. And she goes on an international news outlet, which I can't imagine is going to make circumstances that much better for her kid in school as well. That it just strikes me that that's not going to be a particularly useful thing. And then again, in this New York Post article that was written about this, you know, New York Post, it's not a source we typically use, but that's where she was interviewed. Virginia School's anti-racist program has changed my son, Mom says. And she did say he looks Hawaiian. He's beautiful. He didn't used to see himself as different from other kids. Sure, his skin tone was a little darker. His dad is black and I guess the mom is white and Native American, but she never wanted to box him in with stifling racial classifications. And now an anti-racist curriculum, she says, is itself racist because it indoctrinates students and teachers in a racial essentialist worldview. This is really wacky stuff. If it wasn't so sad and dangerous and disheartening, it would be funny because it seems like comedy, but it's not. And I would expect a lot more of this over the next few years. Melania Trump, not someone we typically talk about, but she gave her first major interview since leaving the White House as a failed first lady. this is an interview on Fox News that I have to tell you, North Korean broadcasters who do North Korean state media, they would see this and blush and go, this is too fawning of an interview. You have to see this. One of the big questions from Pete Hegseth to Melania was, given how attractive you are and successful in business, isn't it biased that you haven't been on the cover of People magazine? This is an interview, folks.
Yes.
How did you put up with the constant criticism? The media. Take Vogue, for example. 5 months into Joe Biden's presidency, Jill Biden's on the cover. Kamala Harris is on the cover before she's even sworn in. Hillary Clinton was on the cover when she was first lady.
Right.
Michelle was on the cover 3 times. Yet, with your business background and your fashion background and your beauty, never on the cover of Vogue. Why?
Is there a more possible question that you could imagine? A question that's more fawning than this?
Double standard.
They're biased. And they have likes and dislikes. And it's so obvious. And I think American people and everyone see it. It was their decision. And I have much more important things to do. And
we don't know what those things are, but she apparently has more important things to do. This is indistinguishable from a scripted state media interview. She said she did enjoy living at the White House.
I like Washington, D.C. Yeah. I know it operates completely different than any other city, but I really like it there, and I enjoyed living in the White House. To be First Lady of the United States was my greatest honor. Mm. I think we achieved a lot in the 4 years.
Can you think of anything Melania achieved? I can't think of one single thing.
Of Trump administration, I enjoyed taking care of the White House. It was my home for a while. I understood it is a people's house. It was a privilege to live there.
And maybe it'll be your home again?
Never say never.
Right. Never say never. She may be back. She took the Fox and Friends interview as an opportunity to promote her NFTs, which I still don't even understand what they do or what they're for. And I kind of know a little bit about this space, and I have no clue what it's about.
So you're using a new technology to help raise the profile and fund these initiatives.
I have been working on my NFT projects since I left the White House. My NFTs, they are available on melaniatrump.com mm-hmm. and usmemorabilia.com. And now we have a few of the NFTs that they are minting on it. It's a national park, beautiful
wow.
3D animated pieces.
It's hard to imagine something more inspirational than a 3D animated Melania NFT, isn't it?
And POTUS Trump. There are pictures
POTUS.
And animated videos
POTUS
from
Trump.
Our time in the White House. Mm. And especially the one that I created for Foster Care Month, it's the rose, the Meta Rose. Mm. Some of the proceeds of the sales of NFTs will go towards education, providing education opportunities for foster care children who are aging out of foster system. Yearly, 20,000 children are aging out of foster care.
A year.
A year, yes. And now we have 407,000 children in foster care.
In America today.
So I will.
What a hard-hitting interview here. And then lastly, she suggests her critics maybe instead of criticizing her, just help foster kids. Okay.
Well, people I see always criticize me whatever I do, and I'm used to that.
Mm-hmm.
I move forward, and I'm here to helping people, and that is the mission. And those people who criticize me, I would encourage them to help in their own community. Or maybe join my Foster the Future initiative.
There you go. So if you were criticizing Melania, instead, do something to help the foster kids. What did we learn in this interview? I think we learned about the technique of the completely meaningless, worthless, pointless, endless softball interview that is within the scope of what Pete Hegseth on Fox News can do. Again, you look at Chinese state media, you look at Saudi state media, Russia Today, you look at North Koreans, KCNA. They would see this and go, "That, oh man, that's a little too fawning even for us. We at least pretend to ask a real question." Pete Hegseth didn't. Bizarre stuff. And there is Melania, in case anybody was sort of anxiously waiting to see what she had to say now that she's out of the White House. I hope that it was satisfying to hear from her. We have a voicemail number, and that number is 2192-DAVID-P. Here's a caller who is understandably confused about the great replacement theory stuff espoused by the Buffalo shooter. Take a listen to this.
Hey, David, that shooter in Buffalo cited great replacement theory? That makes no sense to me, because it's not like Black people in this country, for the most part, are immigrants. I know
True.
Some are, but their ancestors were forcefully immigrated over here, you could say. But I just don't see the logic how he would use that as an excuse to kill that particular demographic.
I don't either.
Do they actually believe that Black people are being sent in here by Democrats or something?
So here's what you have to understand. It's a great point, which is great replacement theory is focused on forcing demographic changes upon the United States through immigration. But for the most part, the people that are coming to the United States legally and illegally are not Black people as traditionally defined. So why would you go and shoot Black people if you're angry about great replacement theory? All you have to understand is this. For a lot of these folks, there's white people and then there's everybody else. So it doesn't matter that great replacement is more about the immigration of what, you know, what we might call brown, Latino, Hispanic people. And the shooter went and targeted Black people. It's just, it's all non-white people. Now, there's sometimes an exception. There's something called the ideal immigrant story about Asian folks. So sometimes these same people who are angry about Black, brown people coming to the United States, in order to try to justify themselves not actually being racist xenophobes, they'll go, "We're fine with people coming from," and they'll usually list Asian countries. They'll say like South Korea and stuff like that. This is called the model minority or the ideal minority. It's another trope that's often part of this. So, but generally speaking, if it's not white people, that's their concern. And so that's the connection between great replacement and Black folks, even though it doesn't actually make much sense. Since most Black folks are indeed born here in the United States. I'm trying to explain something that doesn't make sense. So I hope I've at least explained what they believe accurately. We have a great bonus show for you today. We are going to talk about a Dutch doctor that will keep sending abortion pills to American women. We will explain how North Korea went from zero COVID to 1.2 million cases in just 72 hours. And we will talk about a Supreme Court decision that will make Ted Cruz $500,000 richer. All of those stories and more on today's bonus show. Sign up at joinpacman.com. If you're waiting for our big Memorial Day membership discount, you can get on our newsletter at davidpacman.com. And on Monday, Memorial Day, you'll get an email telling you how to sign up at
nuclear holocaust. It's a very serious problem, and one that faces all of us. Fortunately, here at WRCT Pittsburgh, we broadcast from a steel-reinforced concrete basement. So we'll be playing music long after your sorry corpse has evaporated in a blinding flash of light and heat. I hope this thought comforts you. WRCT Pittsburgh, 88.3 FM. Now and forever.
Hello, my fellow Americans. I would just like to say now, as an expert on the subject, that WRCT Pittsburgh does not blow. Thank you.
and the new USDA organic product standards, WRCT Pittsburgh would like to inform you that all RDJs are genetically modified to bring you best music.
Yo, what's up? How y'all doing out there in Techno Land? RCT Techno DJs in the house. Oh yeah, bringing you the only fat beats in Pittsburgh. Right here on WRCT Pittsburgh, 88.3 FM. Word to your mother.
Would you like to take the sounds of your favorite radio station to places you never thought possible? Well, now you can, because WRCT is live on the internet. Just point your browser to www.wrct.org and click on our live MP3 broadcast. Now you can go out of town without any feelings of loss or regret for leaving us behind, because we're just a mouse click away. WRCT, live on the internet. Because why should Pittsburgh have all the fun?
Depose from the faint. Do you think I'm hot? You're listening to WRCT Pittsburgh.
WRCT, the inside from way out.
DJ Heim from Forest, and you're listening to 88.3 WRCT.
Hey there, folks. Glad you could join me for all the best, the smoothest of the smooth, the cool and gentle sounds of what we call jazz.
Tired of the fluffy stuff? At WRCT Pittsburgh, jazz is a one-syllable word.
My fellow Americans, I would just like to say now, as an expert on the subject, that WRCT Pittsburgh does not blow. Thank you.
For those of you concerned with your health and the new USDA organic product standards, WRCT Pittsburgh would like to inform you that all our DJs are genetically modified to bring you best music.
RCT Pittsburgh, meaty and full of flavor since 1949.
Would you like to take the sounds of your favorite radio station to places you never thought possible? Well, now you can, because WRCT is live on the internet. Just point your browser to www.wrct.org and click on our live MP3 broadcast. Now you can go out of town without any feelings of loss or regret for leaving us behind, because we're just a mouse click away. WRCT, live on the internet. Because why should Pittsburgh have all the fun?
Before we get started, I'd like to remind you that the views, thoughts, and opinions expressed in this show are solely those of individuals involved and do not necessarily represent those of WRCT Pittsburgh and its members.
From New York, this is Democracy Now! Primary primary voters went to the polls in five states Tuesday. Many chose progressive Democratic candidates like Summer Lee in Pennsylvania, who hopes to become the first Black woman to represent the state in Congress. We'll speak with Lever's David Sirota, who says Democratic leaders are joining with oligarchs to try to permanently destroy the progressive movement. And we'll talk to former Bernie Sanders advisor Nina Turner, who just lost her Ohio congressional primary after facing massive spending and attacks from super PACs. Then we go to the front lines of the Battle of Donbass in Ukraine to speak with independent reporter Billy Nesson in Severodonetsk, which is under constant attack.
Okay, well, this is the explosions now, I would say. Probably 3 minutes of mostly shells going back and forth between the Ukrainian forces and the Russian forces. The city of 130,000 is a strategic point, a barometer of which way this thing is going to go. If the Ukrainians can hold the city, I think it's the end of any Russian advances, at least in this part of the country.
All that and more coming up. Welcome to Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, the War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. President Biden visited Buffalo, New York, Tuesday, 3 days after an 18-year-old white supremacist shot dead 10 people at a supermarket in the heart of the Black community. Biden denounced the attack as an act of domestic terrorism and described white supremacy as a poison.
Look, we've seen the mass shootings in Charleston, South Carolina, El Paso, Texas, and Pittsburgh, last year in Atlanta, this week in Dallas, Texas, and now in Buffalo, New York. White supremacy is a poison. It's a poison running through it. It really is.
Biden's trip to Buffalo comes as more details emerge about how the gunman spent months plotting to carry out the mass shooting. Multiple news outlets are reporting the gunman used the online platform Discord to share details about his plot with a small group of people about 30 minutes before the massacre. No one saw the messages, is known to have alerted law enforcement to the imminent attack. In Texas, police have arrested a man in connection with last week's shooting at a hair salon in the Koreatown neighborhood of Dallas. Three Korean women were injured in the shooting. Authorities are investigating the shooting as a hate crime. The suspect's girlfriend said her partner had delusions about Asian people. A new report by the Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, and Firearms and Explosives shows there's been a massive surge in guns made and sold in the United States over the past two decades. The number of guns produced in the U.S. has jumped from about 4 million in 2000 to over 11 million in 2020. Demand for semi-automatic handguns has grown the fastest. By one count, there are now over 400 million guns in the U.S. That's more than one gun for every adult and child living in the country. Voters went to the polls for primary elections in Pennsylvania, Kentucky, Oregon, North Carolina, and Idaho on Tuesday. In Pennsylvania, State Senator Doug Mastriano won the Republican gubernatorial primary. He's a far-right politician who is endorsed by Donald Trump and a